about 300 miles from here, in the country of Canada, there was, in years, 10, 12, maybe 15 years ago, there was a church, a rather large church, where I have preached a few times, where the pastor of the church became infatuated with another young preacher, or a young preacher, and asked him to come to Canada and become his co-pastor. The pastor of the church had been there for numbers of years, said to this young evangelist who was going to become his co-pastor, "I'll preach Sunday morning, and you preach on Sunday night. And we will share equal authority in the church. We'll be co-pastors. Neither of us will be over the other. Neither of us will be boss. We'll be co-bosses, co-pastors of the church." I was there, and I warned them both about it. I said, "It won't work. It will not work." And they said, "We're Christians." And I said, "Christians have problems too. It will not work." In less than 2 years, those men would not speak to each other. The pastor who was there first accused the younger pastor of trying to win the hearts of the people. And the younger pastor accused the older, more experienced pastor of being jealous of him. And the people began to choose up sides. And tonight the church is but a shadow of what it used to be. And as far as I know, those two men will not even speak to each other to this day. What happened to those two men? They became too close. And their familiarity was breeding contempt. Two of my friends in Texas, in the church I used to pastor while I was there, two of the finest men in the church, listen, they both were deacons. They both were soul winners. They both loved me dearly. They decided to go into business together. They entered into business together. They were co-bosses, partners, neither over the other, neither responsible to the other. And I said to them, I said, "You better be careful. There's a great danger in your becoming partners, co-partners in business together." I mean, I say this very earnestly and sincerely. I would not advise two Christians to go in equal business together. I would not advise any two people to go into business on equal level together. But I told them. They said, "But we're Christians." I said, "But Christians have problems too." It wasn't long until the inevitable happened. The honeymoon was over. And what happened was, one of them said to the other that he had taken some money that wasn't rightly his, not stealing from the drawer, but not equal distribution of profit. The other one said, you're accusing me falsely. Don't you do that. I do not know if they'll speak tonight or not." They were both deacons in the church I pastored. They're both my warm, good, personal friends. And yet, they came when they split company, and I do not know if they speak yet or not. Now, what happened to these men? They did not realize that familiarity breeds contempt. Two couples in a church where I was pastor became very close to each other. They became so close until the lady who lived down the street would walk to the couple's house and walk in the door without knocking or ringing the doorbell. She'd walk and open the refrigerator and get a bite to eat, open the cupboard and get a bite to eat. They were that close. And the same thing was reciprocated by the other lady. The men were the same way. One man felt no scruples at all about going down, getting the lawnmower out of his friend's garage, taking it down, mowing his yard, not asking anybody. And those couples were inseparable. If one couple ate out, they ate out together. If one came to church, they both sat together, side by side. They shared every holiday together. And on 4th of July, they shared picnics together. On Christmas, they had noon meal together. On Thanksgiving, they had their meal together. Now, it wasn't long, maybe a year or two, the honeymoon wore off. Now then, those couples will not speak to each other. They will not as much as even go visit each other. They're complete enemies. What happened? They did not realize that familiarity breeds contempt. I know two sisters two sisters. Those sisters were very close. They were inseparable. They're both married. One would go to one's house one day and visit in the afternoon. They'd have a cup of tea or some juice or something, and then maybe watch television for a while or read the newspaper together or go shopping together. They were inseparable. Where one went, the other went. And then something happened to them. One became jealous of the other, and the other couldn't understand it. And now, at this moment, those two sisters will not speak to each other. What happened? They did not realize that familiarity breeds contempt. I know two brothers who went in business together, not in this church, but two brothers who went in business together. They were equal partners in equal shares. And I said to them, you shouldn't do it. You love each other. You're very close to each other. You shouldn't do it. But they said, look, we're brothers. We love each other. And we're Christians. We can get along with each other. Our friendship and our love will withstand the testing of time and of closeness. And I said, no, you shouldn't do it. Now, you just shouldn't do it. And they said, well, we're going to do it anyway. I said, okay. Now, those two brothers, they'll speak to each other, but there's a strained relationship. It'll never be like it was before. Why? They did not realize that familiarity breeds contempt. I know, and in Texas, I had two ladies in my church, in Garland. They were the closest of friends. They were always together. One day, I was called to go to their house and call quickly. I'll never forget it. I went over to one house, and the other lady from the other house was on top of this lady, and they were having a fist fight. I mean, they're pulling hair. They were clawing eyeballs. They were scratching faces. They were... lady had the other one down, and she was straddling her, and she had her hair. She is pulling and pulling and pulling and pulling. And I literally had to pull the one lady off the other. And she weighed about 240 pounds, and it was easy to pull. And those ladies had an old-fashioned fist fight. They never spoke again, as far as I know, all the time I was pastor in Garland, Texas. What happened? They did not realize that familiarity brings contempt. They wrote together. They even vacationed together in some instances. And what happened? They both became great leaders in America. And now they won't. I doubt if they'd speak to each other if they saw each other on the street. They may, but I doubt it. What happened? They did not realize that familiarity breeds contempt. There are folks in this room right now. There are men in this room, grown men in this room, men who have offices in this church, men who are faithful, loyal members of this church, in this room right now, who will not speak to another man in this room right now. I mean, there is a man in the room to whom you'll not speak. He would not shake his hand if he extended his hand. And what happened? They got too close. And maybe a business deal. Maybe one went on the other's note. Maybe one let the other borrow some money. Maybe they went in business together. Maybe one was a customer of the other and didn't pay his bills. But whatever it was, they got closer and closer and closer, and familiarity was breeding contempt. Now, did you ever see someone at a distance and then all of a sudden look at them up close? People often say to me, who've never seen me up close, you don't look the same up close. Now, I know. I do not look near as handsome at a distance as I do up close. I know that. When you get close to me and see the real beauty and the lines of the face, and there's not much hair, but it is the most beautiful hair you've ever seen in your life. One little girl stood out in the alley. She said, you look different up close than you do at a distance. And I said, where do I look best? She said, at a long distance. And for example, the other day, I was in a room on the road and turned the television set on, and I saw a coach, and I had thought that the coach was a good-looking guy, and and I'd only seen him in a distance. But then they interviewed him up close. Well, the guy, he absolutely had a face that was marred. He had a wart on his nose, and up close, he didn't look near as good as he did at a distance. Have you ever noticed somebody at a distance? They look real well. You get close, you find they don't cling their fingernails, or they don't shine their shoes, or they have a ring around the collar, or some other disease like that. And you're shocked because their distance, they look pretty good. But up close, they don't look so good. Now listen, as long as men are human, it is wise, listen to me, it is wise not to get too close. Close in heart? Yes. Close in love? Yes. But not close as far as hour upon hour upon hour upon hour spent together. In any relationship in this world, there ought to be a reserve about that relationship. Dr. Evans over here saying amen? He and I are good friends. I respect Wendell Evans as much, I guess, as I respect most any man on the face of the earth. I think he's the finest college man in the world. One of the greatest days in our church's life was when God sent Wendell and Mrs. Evans to us. Now, Dr. Evans and I are good friends. We cut up together. We laugh together. But we're not together very much. We've never gone fishing together. We've never played golf together because I'm afraid I'd find out that he cheats when he plays golf. And I understand he's over in the rough, and I understand he stays there most of the time. Then he'll take his ball and kick it like that back into the fairway. Now, I don't want to find that out, you see. I know it's true because Mr. Jorgensen has told me about all of that. But we're not together a great deal. I've never, we don't socialize together. We don't go bowling together. Sometimes, maybe if we have some work to do once or twice a year, he'll go with me a drive on a trip somewhere a few miles, and we'll work on the way and work coming back, and we'll laugh a bit and have some fun. But we're not, as far as what you'd call being together a great deal, we're not together a great deal. David Howells is my son. I like the guy. He's a good guy, and I'm proud of him. Dave and I, we're close. I doubt if there's a son in America that loves his dad any more than he loves me, or a dad that loves and appreciates his son any more than I appreciate him. Dave and I are not together over 1 hour a week. 1 hour a week. Now, I wish we were together more. But he's busy, and I'm busy. There's a certain kind, though he loves me, I love him. We've been very close since he was a little bitty boy. Very, very close. But there's a certain kind of reserve and almost a hallowed respect that Dave has for his dad. And there's a certain kind of a respect that I have for him as a man of God that we ought to have, because he is a man of God and I'm a man of God, and there ought to be some kind of respect between us. I love all of you, but the Fisk and I are as close, I guess, is as close as any assistant associate pastor and pastor could be. He loves me, I love him. I admire Brother Colston more than he knows. I love him, he loves me. But there is a professional respect that we have for each other, in spite of the fact that sometimes we'll tell a little story to each other, or we'll laugh together, and so forth. But there's a professional respect that we have for each other. We must not get too close. I don't get too close, Brother Fisk. You know, well, of course, you know how he is. You've been close to him. You know as well as I do. You know, he's got a problem under here and got a problem here, and so forth. He needs to use some mouth deodorant. But I'm saying I feel that if I got too close, the other day I was in Atlanta, Georgia, waiting for an airplane, looked up, Brother Fisk said something, and there he was. I didn't know he was in the airport. He didn't know I was in the airport. And we got to ride back on the airplane together for a couple of hours. He sat once across the aisle from me. I wouldn't sit next to him. Same problem mentioned a while ago. So I sat in the seat here, and he sat in the seat over here across the aisle from me, and we talked all that, and I enjoyed it so much. I enjoyed the fellowship, and when I got off the plane, I found myself rejoicing for the time we got to spend just chatting a little while together. But we're not together a great deal. Why? Because familiarity breeds contempt. Now, even in the Bible, stop and think for a minute. Even in the Bible, folks that got too close with each other had some problems. Let's take leaders such as Paul and Barnabas. Paul and Barnabas, great giants, missionaries. Barnabas was the leader of the first missionary journey. Paul became the leader in the midst of the journey. And they had trouble. Paul and Peter had trouble. the great giants of the New Testament. If you wanted to find the two greatest men in the New Testament, Paul and Peter. Peter's the first listed of the apostles. Every time they're listed, Peter, Andrew, James, John, that's it. Peter, Andrew, James, and John. He was one of the three that was called into the inner circle. He was one of the three on Mount Tabor with the transfiguration. He was one of the three who went inside the house at the raising of the dead person. He was on the inner circle. But he was always Peter, James, and John. Or Peter, Andrew, James, and John. Peter, James, and John. Peter, Andrew, James, and John. When the apostle is listed, he's always the first one listed. When the three are listed, he's always the first of the inner circle that's listed. Paul, the great missionary, the man that did more for the New Testament church than any other man apart from the Savior himself. Paul, and yet Paul and Peter couldn't get along with each other. One time Paul said Peter came to Jerusalem, to Antioch, from Jerusalem, and he wouldn't eat with Gentiles. He thought he was too good to eat with Gentiles. And Paul said, I rebuked him to his face. Paul said, you hypocrite, you. And Peter and Paul had strife and had trouble. Why? Because familiarity breeds contempt, even for great giants like Peter and Paul. John Calvin and Martin Luther did not get along with each other. Two great giants of the faith, two great men of the Reformation. And yet John Calvin and Martin Luther could not get along. They had strife, they had trouble. And why? Because familiarity breeds contempt. George Whitfield, I think, one of the greatest preachers that ever lived. And John Wesley, who founded the great Methodist movement, well, it was a great Methodist movement. John Wesley and George Whitfield, the two leaders of their day in their great movement, had strife with each other, could not get along with each other. Why? You can't have two heads on the same set of shoulders. You need one head. Somebody's got to be boss. Somebody's got to be in charge. And these fellows were both giants in the faith, and they had trouble. Don't be surprised when great giants of the faith have trouble today. Don't be surprised, because they too are human beings, and familiarity breeds contempt. I said leaders like Paul and Barnabas, and Paul and Peter, and Calvin and Luther, and Wesley and Whitfield. But go on in the Bible. You'll find brothers had trouble if they got too close. Jacob and Esau had trouble in the Bible. Cain and Abel had trouble in the Bible. Isaac and Ishmael, half-brothers, had trouble in the Bible. Moses and Aaron had trouble in the Bible. Why? Because familiarity breeds contempt. Listen, even with brothers, there ought to be a certain kind of a restraint. Never a letting the hair down. Pardon the pun. I've never had that problem a great deal. But never letting the hair down. Never completely bearing yourself. Never completely opening up everything in your heart. Why? Because familiarity breeds contempt. What a tragic change. For brothers to be born from the same woman, to come from the same womb, to come from the same seed of their father, to live in the same, sleep in the same crib, to share the same room, to have the same parents, to share the same table, to go to the same school, to play the same games, to enjoy the same fellowship, to have the same friends, to go to the same church, sing in the same choir, go to the same youth activities, and yet grow up and be anything but close. But it happens as sure as shooting when people get too close to each other. Jacob, Esau, do you recall the story? Jacob got Esau's birthright, tricked him out of it, and Esau said, I'll kill him. For 20 years, they didn't see each other. Why? Familiarity breeds contempt. Cain killed Abel. Why? Brothers, familiarity breeds contempt. Isaac and Ishmael broke up and had fight, couldn't get along. Why? Familiarity breeds contempt. Moses and Aaron, hand in hand. Moses, the great leader. Aaron, the high priest. They couldn't get along after a while. They had strife. They had trouble. Why? Familiarity breeds contempt. Now let me say something. You're not going to be with your brother 12 hours a day and get along with him. You're not going to do it. You need to be close to your brother and love your brother, but you need to have more relationships than that one. And you don't need to get with him all that. I know some cases in this church where brothers, they love each other, but there's been some strife and a strain. Why? Because they did not stop to realize familiarity breeds contempt. Thinking business. Abraham and Lot. Abraham and his nephew Lot went in business together, went down to Egypt, got in business, got wealthy, came back, had a lot of cattle, and so forth. And then what happened? They got too close. They're too close to each other. and Lot decided he wanted to leave, and then Abraham and Lot broke up. And there was strife. Not only Abraham and Lot had trouble, but their herdmen had trouble. Lot's, folks that loved Lot said, we don't like Abraham. Folks that liked Abraham said, we don't like Lot. Let me tell you something, folks. Listen to me. One of the dangers in Christian circles, and I preach this across this country, is I, as Jack Hiles, whatever fellowship I have among fundamentalists and preachers in this country, I am not only bound to get along myself with other fundamentalists, but I'm bound to promote unity with those that follow me, so my followers will be followers also of other fundamentalist leaders in the country. But we get together. Well, you know what? Brothers, business people have trouble. Again, I'm warning you. Go ahead. Sink your money together. Share business together. And both of them be equal in authority and partners. This man came to office less than 2 months ago. Didn't know what to do with his brother. He said, my brother says I'm not doing right. And I say, my brother's not doing right. What can we do? In business together. What a tragedy. Take brothers and sisters in the Bible. Moses and Aaron had some trouble. Why? Familiarity breeds contempt. Father and son, David and Absalom, had trouble. Why? Familiarity breeds contempt. Friends like David and Saul had trouble. Why? Familiarity breeds contempt. Now, I want you to notice something. The quality of these men. I want you to notice who these men are that had trouble. There's Moses. Moses, meekest man that ever lived. Moses, called a servant of God. God said, Moses, my servant is dead. Moses, who led 3.5 million Jews across the Red Sea on dry ground and led them toward the promised land and kept them in peace with each other almost for those 40 years. Moses! And yet Moses had trouble when he got too close. Who else? There's Abraham. Abraham called the friend of God. Abraham, the father of the faithful. Abraham, who left the Ur of the Chaldees and by faith went to seek a city which had foundations, whose builder and ruler was God. Abraham did not even know where he was going to go. And he went anyway, and Abraham went. But Abraham had trouble. That great giant of God. Listen, if Moses could have trouble and break up with his brother, and if Abraham could have trouble and break up with his nephew in business, and if Moses could have trouble with his sister Miriam, and if David could have trouble, man after God's own heart, greatest kings ever sat on Israel's throne, if men like David and Moses and Paul and Peter and Abraham could have trouble, then you better watch it. Now listen, Paul. There ought to be in this church, as we interact with each other, there has to be a respect that we keep for each other, or we'll have troubles. Two teachers teach across the hall from each other. Their classes interact every day. Those two teachers, maybe during a break, they get a cup of coffee or a glass of juice together. And they become good friends. And so what do they do? They get an apartment together. And they share that apartment. And one teacher finds out the other teacher's feet stink when she goes to bed at night. Another teacher finds out that the other has halitosis. One finds out that one teacher doesn't hang her clothes up. And before you know it, they're having troubles. Why? Because they're too familiar. Now, we got to watch it. I'm not saying you shouldn't share an apartment. I'm just saying, if you do, you ought not to be together all the time. There ought to be some time on your part. Other friends you ought to have. Other relationships you ought to have. Other activities you ought to have. And when you come to your apartment, there ought to be a certain amount of professional restraint and professional appreciation and professional distance that will keep you close because you're not too close. Listen, when you get too close, you get far. You bounce like that, or you come like a boomerang. But if you come like this until you get to close in heart, close in prayer, close in work, but not so close that you bear your faults one to the other. I'm saying, in a church like this, two teachers, there are two people that work a few feet from each other on the staff. Maybe 10 feet apart. You come in the same door every morning. You say good morning at the same time every day. You come to the same staff meetings. And you get to where you know each other pretty well. And you let your hair down. And you say some things you shouldn't have said. You talk about somebody you shouldn't have talked about. they find out that you're not human. And after a while, there's strife, and somebody won't speak. Listen, I want to say this. I'll say it. I cannot even comprehend anybody working in the same building with somebody else and not speaking to them. Beyond me. It's sinful. It's dirty. It's wrong like drinking is wrong. It's wrong like murder is wrong. It's sin. In God's dear name, we ought to be promoting unity, not division. Here are two people singing the same singing group. Here are the same microphone. And we eat them up here, as you can tell. And they get that close. And one gal's right here, one gal's right here. And they practice together. And they sing together. And then they go out to eat together. And before you know it, you've got one relationship, and that's all, outside your family. And you are too close. Now, you're headed for trouble, as sure as I go. Oh, you say not us. We're good Christians. Abraham's a pretty good Christian, too. Moses wasn't a bad Christian. And Paul will do if he can't find anybody else. And Peter was a pretty good second-rate preacher himself. I suspect that Peter is almost as good a Christian as you are. I suspect Moses could almost compare with you. Now listen to me. You listen to me. You listen to me. You go ahead. Find somebody. Fall in love with them. I'm not talking about husband and wife. I'm not even talking about sweetheart. Though I'm going to get to that after a while. But go ahead and get up close. And get too close. And go all the time. Call each other every morning early. And the last thing you do at night, call again. And be sure that you go out to eat every day. And get closer and closer and closer. The day is going to come, and you're going to see her fall, she's going to see yours, and you're going to have trouble. All because familiarity breeds contempt. Now, because of that, I'm not going to lose confidence in people when I find they're not perfect. Now, listen to me carefully. Folks, we're interwoven here into a pretty intricate machine. When I find out that Dr. Evans is human, I have not found it out yet so far. He is the most perfect fellow with B.O. that I know of in the whole world. But when I find out he's not perfect, I realized it before I met him. I realized it before I knew him well. I knew he wasn't perfect. Because I knew he wasn't perfect, when I found out he wasn't perfect, I was not disappointed. One day, on a Monday morning, when I was a lad, my mother called me to our front room. We had three rooms, I think, then, two or three. And my mother called me to the front room, and she and Dad were sitting together across from each other in the front room. And my mother said to me, "Son, your father and I have something to tell you. Your father is leaving our home. He'll never live here again. He does not want to live with us anymore." I got on my knees and begged my dad not to leave. I asked him if he wouldn't rather have me than a bottle of whiskey. And my dad turned and grimaced and did not even weep a tear as he walked away, never to enter our house again. Now, I'll never forget how I felt that night, that day and that night. When I went to bed that night back in the little back room where I slept, I said, "Dear God, my mom and daddy don't live together anymore. And my daddy doesn't live with us. But I said, Dear God, I love my mama. And I love my daddy. And I don't want to choose. I want my mama. And I want my daddy. And I don't want to choose." Across America tonight, there is a division among fundamentalists. And I feel the same way. I have some giants in the faith whom I've loved for many years, admired, respected. Now, when they can't get along with each other, I don't want to have to choose either one because I love them both. They've been my leaders. They've been my examples. They've been my heroes. But I say this much. When I find out that they can't get along with somebody, I'm not going to lose confidence in them. I knew they were human. Before that, when I found out about it, I wasn't disappointed. Realize that they're weak. Realize that men have weaknesses even while you're at a distance from them. Abraham, great Abraham, lied about Sarah being his wife. He was human. Moses lost his temper, smote the rock twice, and said, "Oh, you rebels!" Lost his ticket to the Holy Land. Never got to go in. Moses! I think the greatest Christian in the entire Bible is Moses. Lost his temper. Wasn't human. Samson. It is said about Samson more than it is said about any other man in the Bible. The Spirit of the Lord came upon him. And yet Samson sinned with Delilah. Lost his hair. Lost his power. I'm glad that it's not necessarily synonymous. But lost his hair. Lost his power. Lost his eyesight. Lost his freedom. Lost his ministry. Lost everything. But he was a great man of God. David. Man after God's own heart. You know the story of Bathsheba. You know the story of Uriah. No need to refresh your memory about the sins of David. But he was a great man of God. Jacob. Out of the will of God for 20 years. James and John wanted the seat. Sit on the right hand and the left hand of our Lord. In the middle of rain. Peter. Cursed and swore. By the way, folks, I think I better tell you. I have checked, and those are not the bones of John the Baptist that they've been talking about. They're not the bones of John the Baptist. But it's kind of nice to make up a few lies like that if you want to every once in a while. They're as near the bones of John the Baptist as Peter's bones are in Rome, I'll guarantee you for sure. Probably some hog that died outside Rome that says Peter's bone. But I'm saying that James and John wanted the upper seat. And if Peter denied the Lord and cursed and swore, and if Jacob backslid for 20 years, Abraham lied about Sarah being his wife, Moses lost his temper and smote the rock quiet, and David committed the awful sin of Bathsheba and Uriah, and if Samson lost his power because of Delilah, when I found out that my friends are human, I'm not going to put love in them. I'm going to give leeway for them. I knew that John Rice was human before I got to know him well. Now that I know him well, I still know he's human. I think perhaps he may be the greatest Christian that I know. As far as living it, day after day, week after week is concerned. But I found out he's human. I was sitting one night in Indianapolis, a restaurant, and Dr. Rice went, "Ha!" And I said, "What are you ha-ing about?" He said, "Aren't women funny?" And I said, "Of course, everybody knows that." I said, "Why, did you, Ms. Rice, have a fuss today?" He said, "Just a little one. Just a little one." Somebody asked Dr. Bob Jones Sr. one time if he ever wanted to divorce his wife. He said, "No, I wanted to choke her to death several times." Now, human. Human. I knew Brother Roloff was human before I met him. So when I met him and got close to him and found out he was human, I wasn't surprised. I knew he wasn't perfect before I met him. I knew Bob Jones was human before I met him. So when I find he proves his humanity, I'm not going to forsake him. I knew Dr. Lee Robertson was human before I met him. When I found out that my suspicion was a reality, I didn't lose my confidence in him. Don't you think it'd be a wonderful thing if everybody said, "We're all human. And we know that there's going to be a time when each of us is going to find some things about every one, other one of us that is imperfect. But if we know it beforehand and allow for it beforehand, we'll have a reserve built up so it'll not cause any serious difficulty." May I say this also? Do not share the same area of leadership. Please listen to this. Don't be a co-boss with anybody. Anybody. Dr. John Rice and I get along beautifully. One reason we do. He comes here, I'm the boss. I go down there, he's the boss. We're not co-bosses. He's the boss. But he comes here, this is my domain, this is my throne up here, and he respects me, and the decisions I make are the ones we go by. Can you imagine Les Roloff and I being co-pastors? Huh? Sunday morning service? I want the choir to sing an opening. Brother Roloff wants to sing the opening. Then I say, raise the choir. Brother Lester tells me, well, they came, and they were blessed. And it gave that old weary a rest. And it made the narrow blinded eyes to see. And it fed the hungry soul. And it made the wounded whole by the waters of a blue galley. Well, bless God, Brother Jack. I'm glad to be here. Now, I'm afraid, that's not the way I'd want to start every Sunday morning service. And I said, Lester, would you please have a seat till preaching time comes? And he said, Brother Jack, I'm God's man. And nobody tells God's man what to do. And I said, Lester, are you going to sit down now, or am I going to throw you down? You say, yes, I'm supposed to lift your hand against God's throne. Okay, I'd kick him down now. But you said, don't you love Brother Lester? Well, of course I love him. Why? He's in charge of Family Altar Broadcast. I'm in charge of First Baptist Church of Hammond, the pastor here. He's in charge of his home down there. I'm in charge of the schools here. He's in charge of his ministry in revivals. I'm in charge of the great ministry at First Baptist Church of Hammond. I go down there. He's the boss. He comes here. I'm the boss. No place can run with two heads that are equal. No place. And I say this also, do not lose your propriety with even your closest friend. Even your closest friend. I think it's a great danger. Follow me. I think it's a great danger when husband and wife get so close, so they feel at ease to run around the house, maybe half a day in their underwear. Do you think that's what made Sarah call Abraham Lord? Do you think Abraham ran around in his shorts all day long? With his belly button showing? You think that's what made Sarah call him Lord? No, sir. No, sir. You think, listen, there are men in this room right now, your children don't have any respect for you because you're such a slob at home. Lay around on the sofa. I do not know how long it's been since one of our children has seen me without a tie on. I suspect I'm as close to David, Linda, and Cindy, and what's the other one's name? Becky. Nobody's perfect. I told you a while ago, nobody's perfect. I suspect I'm as close to them as any dad. I know 75% of their names. It's not bad for 52 with senility. But I... I'm pretty close. They respect me. There's a reserve. None of our kids ever talk back to dad. None of them. You know why? They want to live. But there's more to it than that. My children would no more sass me, and this is all the way through their lives, then I would sass the Queen of England. Well, there was a day when men in America had some austerity and some reserve and some dignity. I mean, the old man used to sit at the head of the table in his house when he was a king, and his chair was a throne, and he sat there, and the children revered and respected and feared Daddy almost like you fear God. What was it? Daddy, he was somebody. Kids don't go bad because you don't share a lollipop with them. Everybody now. Well, he was bad because his dad, he didn't go to ball game with him. Now, I went to some ball games today. But there's more to it than that. Ah,
have nothing more to it than that. Buddy, buddy, hey, and hey, son, hey, pop, hey, dad, hey, son. More to it than that. Respect. Reserve. A holy reverence.
Such a dignity and respect should exist in every human relationship. May I say this? There's only one in the only one person to whom you can bear everything. Suppose tomorrow when I go to Newport News, Virginia to speak at a big preacher's convention. Suppose I stood up tomorrow and there I am lecturing and speaking on church building and soul winning. Suppose I stood up and I said, before I start preaching, won't you fellas pray for me? We were down to 240 in Sunday school yesterday. Haven't had anybody save you for 4 or 5 weeks. I want you to pray for my burdens and problems. You think they'd want to listen to me? Suppose Dr. Shoemaker back here, or one of the doctor's treaters, Dr. Geary goes, you go to him tomorrow morning. He's your doctor. Well, you walk in, the doctor says, good morning. He says, good morning, Doc, how are you? And the doctor says, I was awake all night. Feel terrible. Been feeling bad for months. What's wrong, Doc? Can't figure it out. Now, what can I do for you? Oh, Doc, nothing. I got an appointment. I got to go. Sure. Now, that means I can't share, a leader can't share his burdens a great deal with his followers. I share my weaknesses with you. I don't share my sins with you. Dr. John Rice, I saw him one day, went in his room, knocked on the door, it's time to go preach. And he was in the bathroom, fully clothed, had a piece of paper, tearing a little bit of pieces. I said, Dr. John, what is that? He said, it's my prayer list. I said, well, why are you throwing it away? He said, this one has all my sins on it. He said, I don't want anybody to find it. He writes out his sins. Well, the fist did that. Took him 4 tablets. I wrote mine on a piece of paper about that big. On microfilm. May I say this also? Give much, loan little. Did you hear me? Give much, loan little. There's a man in this room right now. Someone on this note. I guess it's been 5, 10 years ago. $2,000. I signed his note. He didn't pay it. I had to pay it. He knows he's here. You dirty crook. this is the way I can get all the things off my chest and under the guise of the Spirit leading me and preaching, you know. No, I don't want the money. I paid it off. I'd rather have his friendship than the $2,000. I never think about it except morning, noon, and night. Really. Doesn't enter my mind once a year. I shake his hand, I guess every week, or see him about every week. Shake his hand. Never bother him a bit. I don't want the money. He gave it to him. I'd be disappointed. Why? Because I'm not going to let $2,000 keep me from being a friend. Not $2,000 piddling. You know what that'll buy? Buy enough food for a week or two. I'm not going to let it do it. I'm going to give much. Loan little. May I say this also? Forgive and forget. Let me ask you a question. Has the familiarity of two girls living in the same dormitory room two young men share the same dormitory room two ladies go soul winning together and have for years two couples live next door to each other two men are soul winning partners. Two teachers in school are close to each other. Listen, if you don't watch it, if we don't watch it, our closest friends will become our bitterest enemies. I'll tell you a story, I'm sure. years ago, I was asked to speak at a retreat for a college called Howard Payne College in Brownwood, Texas. They'd gone out to a little campground somewhere, and the entire student body had a retreat. I preached one night along this line. I did not know a thing was wrong. I just preached along this line. We stood to sing the invitation, and suddenly the piano quit playing. The pianist got up, walked all across the building, put her arms around the student back there and said, "I'm sorry." The student said, "What for?" And she said, "Because we used to love each other. We were close. And something happened. I want you to forgive me." We had no piano. Other people began to do the same thing. And finally, the song leader quit leading the singing. He walked right down the center aisle, looked at the fellow, and he said to the fellow, "You and I are good friends. We got too close to each other." I've never seen a bigger revival break out than broke out that night. We spent about 1 hour, people just getting right with each other, whom once they had loved. For 20 years, going on 20 years, I've been pastor here. We have grown probably into the closest-knit church inner circle family in the world today. I dare say that we are as close in spirit as any church in the whole world. But here's what happens. Because we are close and love each other, we can, listen, you know, you can over-fellowship just like you can overeat. Did you know an excessive amount of something that's good can become wrong? You know, a lack of temperance and fellowship and time together can be unwise. Many a husband and wife divorce because they get too close. No, not close in heart, too close. Many a brother and sister spend their lives with something in their hearts against each other. Why? Because they got too close. Now listen, folks. There's no reason in the world why that we ought to harbor these things. Miss O'Clair, I do not know if we've ever had any trouble with each other. Let me see if I can think. If I can't think of any, let's have some this week. It'll be a better illustration next time I go through this subject. But I know you're human. You know I'm human. Only if I know you're human is I see something in your hair right now. There. It's not there now. It's over Brother Moffitt's head now. There have been times. See there? Excess. There have been times when Brother Fisk and I have been together, and like I said, we're very close. But there have been times he's seen my humanity escape. And there was a time or two when I saw his reveal itself. But I know he's human. He knows I'm human. So if we do sometimes manifest that humanity, we prepared for it. Let me ask you a question. Is there somebody in the world or here in this room, maybe that you have gotten a bit too close with? And because of it, it's caused a strained relationship. It's not because of what they are. She did me wrong. He did me wrong. No. That's not the trouble. You knew he was a wrongdoer before you ever got close to him. And you knew she was a wrongdoer. We're all wrongdoers. And we're all going to do each other wrong if we get too close to each other. Now, forget it. Forget what he did. Don't go to bed tonight
Oh, if he just knew, he knows what he did.
Don't go to bed like that tonight. Did you know two people can actually think they're both right? It's possible. For example, I know I'm always right. You know it too, that I'm always right. But two people, fellow said to me, Friday night, he said, "Well, I want to tell you something. A certain preacher is a liar." I said, "Sure he's a liar. You're a liar too. You're a liar, and 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 you're a liar. I'm the only one on the platform is not a liar. And I'm a liar." And you're unemployed. But now wait a minute. This afternoon, I was digging through my briefcase, and I was going through my calendar speaking engagement for 1981. And I was seeing if I had any dates open in 1981. Somebody wanted some dates. I was seeing if I had some dates open early 1981. 81? Yeah. And you want to fill out? Mr. Lively, you want to fill out? A note to myself that I had written. I was talking to your wife one day. I told her I'd have a certain meeting about something with the administrators of the school. I guess it's been 3 months. And I wondered why you've been so cool to me lately. Folks, I lied to her. I didn't do it on purpose. But I told her I'd have the meeting. I forgot it. I wrote it down. But in the briefcase, it's on an airplane so much, I throw it around so much, the little note about that big had fallen down inside my 1981 schedule. As I was going through it this afternoon, I found that note. Talk to Mrs. Lively and some of the administrators about a decision. Oh, my soul, my soul, my soul. Now, Mrs. Lively could say, "I'll tell you, we're not going to work for that preacher. He's a big liar." And the truth is, I just blew it. And I blow a lot of things like that. Of course, I got a heap of blowing going on. And so do you.